Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya. The New York Mets lose the series to the Philadelphia Phillies. They do win a game, so I guess we should celebrate that. Instead of it being a 9-game losing streak, it's 8 losses in 9 games, 1 game out of first place, 3.5 games up on a playoff spot, and just a real kind of ass whooping to end this series. I sat there throughout this losing streak, I think we all did, and thought, hey, once they get a victory, once they just get one, once they snap the losing streak, more will come. Well, right away, that is not the case, because after they explode on Saturday with the 11 runs, with the 7 home runs, they come out on Sunday Night Baseball against the Philadelphia Phillies, battling for first place, and they stunk it up. You know, I'm not even going to start with David Peterson, because the reality with David Peterson was he was due for one of these outings, for a stinker. And it was a stinker that really came out of nowhere, because over the first 3 innings of this game, he was locked in. Even when he put the first 2 guys on base in the 3rd inning, it was really bad luck, especially the infield hit he gave up to Edmundo Sosa. And then Buddy Kennedy put together that good at-bat where Peterson lost him. And then Peterson was able to get through it. He picked off Sosa. He struck out Trey Turner in a big spot. And so through 3 innings, it looked like it was same old for David Peterson. And then right out of the gate in the 4th inning, the Phillies made hard contact. Kyle Schwarber hit a home run. But even after that, when Alec Bohm hit one that was about 110 miles per hour, and luckily Brandon Nimmo ran it down, you could tell the Phillies were getting big swings on David Peterson, better swings on David Peterson, and they bombed him. But more so than Peterson getting bombed, the offense, which explodes on Saturday, you know, gives you everything we have been dreaming for on Saturday. They come out on Sunday and lay a huge egg. And you know what killed me the most about the offensive no-show on Sunday? And maybe this is the concern that's really starting to build about this team. When the Phillies go out and score 5 runs in the 4th inning, and it's 5-0, you know, and Edmundo Sosa hits that 3-run bomb right center field, and they attack David Peterson the way they did, the game is not over. Or at least in theory, the game shouldn't be over. Because the Mets have an offense, and maybe I'm the delusional one, that is still waiting for this offense to prove that it's a top 3 offense in the National League, a top 5 offense in Major League Baseball. I look at being down 5-0 in the 5th inning against someone as average as Jesus Luzardo, and I figure, okay, come back. Score 2 in the top of the 5th inning and make it a 5-2 game. And then all of a sudden, put some pressure on this Philly team. Put some pressure on this Philly bullpen. Chase Luzardo in the 5th inning. Get to the Phillies' pen. And this game is not over. And I think what was so depressing about the Sunday night game, along with the fact that Tyrese Haliburton tore his Achilles, I don't care who you are, that sucked for him. It sucked for the Pacers. And selfishly, it sucked for sports fans, because you're sitting here watching this game 7 of the NBA Finals waiting for something epic. And even though the Pacers showed a lot of fight and actually had a lead after Tyrese went down, numerous leads, that was a buzzkill. Buzzkill for everybody, but obviously mostly for Tyrese Haliburton, who's going to be out for a very, 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 very long time. But back to the baseball. The buzzkill to me was, come out and score some runs. Make it a game. Show some fight. And instead, in the top of the 5th inning, granted it's the bottom of the order, Jesus Luzardo barely breaks a sweat and pitches a 1-2-3 inning. But okay, top of the 6th inning, you got the top of the order coming up. It's 5-0, but we've seen the Mets come back from deficits like this before. But then again, the more I think about it, it's last year. That's what I think of. Or even go back a few years earlier to 2022, because one game that really jumps out at me was that Mark Canha game when he hit the game-winning home run either in the eighth or ninth inning. The Mets have had a lot of great comebacks in Philadelphia. They've shown a lot of fight in Philadelphia. They've scored a lot of runs in Philadelphia, like we saw in game two of this series. So I'm sitting there, and this is where my disappointment really lies. I'm sitting there naively waiting for the offense to break out of it. And the reality is, I think I've sat here on the Rico for months now. Maybe the word is naive. Naively waiting for this offense to become something. It just isn't. And that is a high-powered offense, a team that can score five runs per game. That was my expectation coming in. And I think what's killing it is not a knock on Lindor or a knock on Soto or a knock on Alonso or even Nimmo. It's a knock on the bottom half of this batting order, which in this game, when it combined, let me add it up, 0 for 12. 0 for 12. 6 through 9 went 0 for 12. Even in Saturday's game, where the Mets exploded with the 11 runs in 15 hits, all of it was coming from the top of the order. I mean, they hit five home runs from the first three guys in the batting order. So in a lot of ways, Sunday night's game, the rubber game loss to the Phillies, is a microcosm of me and others sitting here waiting for an offense to wake up all year long, to live up to our expectations, and then we sit there with egg on our face because the offense did nothing. Nothing. Top of the sixth inning, top of the order up. It's a 5-0 game. Let's see them put a rally together. Lindor grounds out. Marte grounds out. Soto strikes out. Same thing in the seventh inning. They finally got Luzardo out of the game, but by that point, there's a runner on first and two outs. They're losing 5-0. Is Tyrone Taylor going to come up with this big magical hit to get him back in the game? The answer is no. That's what really disappointed me about game three of this series. Disappointed me was score some runs, build off of what happened in game two. And there was nothing to build off of. And not just the offense doing nothing, not just David Peterson having a bad start, which is rare for him this season. I also got to get on Francisco Lindor a little bit. His defense wasn't great. The ball off of the bat, it was the, man, I'm trying to remember the exact one. I think it was the Otto Kemp ball was the one that could have been a double play and went off his glove. He had a few balls go off his glove. A few that he should have made the play on. The Trey Turner base hit in the fourth inning. Like, Lindor did not give you that gold glove caliber defense. He wasn't called for any errors, and that's why it can be misleading sometimes. But I think, and I'm trying to remember, I'm looking at my scorecard to see if I even marked it. But I think it was when Porter came up with two on and one out in the fourth inning, and he hit a ball very hard. I mean, everybody was hitting the ball off David Peterson hard in the fourth inning, but it was just a touch off of Lindor's glove. It bounced away. It drove a run in. It made a 1-0 game, 2-0 game. It also set up first and third, nobody out. And that's when, or one out. And that's when Edmundo Sosa hit the 3-run home run, which I still can't believe was hit as far as it was hit. He goes opposite field and it was hit like 430 feet. But if Lindor gets on that Porter play or that Kemp play, Otto Porter, thinking of Otto Porter, I got basketball on my mind, the Otto Kemp play, and he somehow turns a what would have been a very nifty double play, all of a sudden you're out of it and it's 1-0 and you can survive. Now, we later saw the offense would do nothing, so maybe they just lose frustratingly 1-0 or 2-1, however the game turns out. But it's those little things. It's those little things that have really hurt this team over the course of this 9-game stretch where they've lost 8 times. Whether it's a tiny base running mistake, whether it's a defensive play that, yeah, it's not routine, it's not easy, but if you make it, it changes the entire complexion of an inning. The Mets are simply not doing it. So I had hoped that the breakout on Saturday would wake this team up. It may. I mean, look at the Yankees. The Yankees finally won a game. They lost the next day, and then they responded by winning two more. And now if you're a Yankee fan, you certainly feel a lot better about yourself. But if the hope was Sunday was going to turn into something positive, that would not be the case. I'm not worried about David Peterson. Let me just address him a little bit. I think it was just one of those outings. It was a bad one. And it was, like I said, weird because he started the game off so well. Like that first inning, striking out Kyle Schwarber on a nasty 3-2 slider, getting Alec Bohm to tap back to the mound, a 1-2-3 inning in the second inning. He was locating his slider. He was getting swing and misses. He worked out of trouble, that kind of issue he ran into in the third inning with a little bit of bad luck, and then the walk with the huge pickoff play, and then striking out Trey Turner. Like, he really looked in command, and it just came crashing down. And I am willing to just say, yeah, it happens. It's baseball. But I'm also willing to say the same thing I've said a lot throughout this season. It's okay to have a mediocre starting pitching performance if you can have your offense bail you out. And they didn't do it. And the bullpen, even for a brief amount of time with Devinsky in the fifth and Dednell Nunez in the sixth, at least for two innings, kept them close before Tyler Zuber ran into trouble. But this was, again, about the offense not showing up. And you look back at Saturday's game, which felt so good. It did. You know, yeah, you're on a long losing streak. We had that special Rico with Carlos Mendoza where I have to admit he did correctly predict scoring a lot of runs when he said, and go back if you haven't heard the interview, episode 501, live from Fanatics Fest, when Mendy says, I got a feeling we're going to get 8 tonight. And they go out and they score 11. And then, of course, the best part, not the best part, but one of the best parts was, of course, I give him crap about Jared Young. What's the love affair? And Jared Young hits a home run. Now, granted, that home run was icing on the cake. But even Saturday, before I compliment what deserves to be complimented from Saturday's game, even Saturday's game wasn't perfect. Even Saturday's game had a mistake. Go back to the first inning of this game. Lindor flies out to right field. Nimmo hits a home run. Great. They're up 1-0. And Juan Soto hits the ball off the fence and ends up at first base. So that's problem number one. That was warning sign number one on Saturday. Even up 1-0. Here we go. The Mets are going to continue to make little mistakes. They get a break on the Abel Wild pitch after Alonso gets a hit. So they have second and third, one out, up 1-0. If you're Jeff McNeil, can you just hit the ball on the ground of the right side and drive a second run home? Could you do that? And instead, what does McNeil do? He hits a weak fly ball to left field, can't drive the run in. Jared Young grounds out, doesn't drive the run in. And what do we see an inning later? When the Phillies come back and tie the game immediately on the Castellanos RBI double, they have Max Kepler hit the ball on the ground and drive in a cheap run, which an inning earlier, the Mets can't do. So let's not forget, yes, they had 15 hits. Yes, they scored 11 runs. Early in this game, were you not freaking out? Early in this game, when Soto hits a ball off the fence and is on first base, McNeil can't drive a run in with less than two outs. What the hell else is new? The Phillies do drive in a run with less than two outs on an out. The Phillies come back again and actually take a 3-1 lead on what? A wild pitch in which Francisco Alvarez has no idea how to block a ball in the dirt. That was the moment. I don't care what Mendy said or what David Stearns is going to say, I'm telling you right now, it's just a gut feeling. The moment Francisco Alvarez is trying to frame a freaking pitch with a runner on third and two outs, a pitch that there's no reason to frame because it's in the dirt, and you basically lazily try to make a backhand play, and that ball gets past you, and that's the Phillies' third run, and it's 3-1. That was the moment where they decided to send his ass down. And we'll get more into the decision to send Alvarez down, something I had said for weeks I didn't want to do. I stand by that. I'll get more into that later. But when anyone asks, because the big topic on Sunday after Alvarez was shockingly sent down was, how do you do that after he had a home run in the ninth inning? No. They did that because seven innings earlier, he committed, yes, it's a wild pitch, but the lack of being able to block a ball in the dirt gave the Phillies a 3-1 lead. Let's not forget that. So timing really wasn't that surprising. It really wasn't. It's not about the home run he hit in the ninth inning of a game that was over. It was about the non-block allowing the Phillies to score a third run when they shouldn't have scored a third run. It should have been 2-1 going into the third inning, but Alvarez could not block that ball in the dirt. More on that later, but let's not get confused here. I think that was the moment where David Stearns probably picked up the phone and said, okay, I heard Pete Hoffman say on the Rico Bronya, I have to do something bold. I have to do something big like I did last year when I DFA'd Joey Wendell. And I heard that redheaded geek Evan say to Hoff, what could you do? What's big? What would it be? And you know what? I'm going to send Francisco Alvarez down. And that's what he did. I'll get to that later. I want to do a little bit more on Saturday's game because it was a victory and there was some positives to take out of it. After they're down 3-1, we see the back-to-back-to-back home runs from Lindor, from Nimmo, from Soto. Marvelous. Look, these monsters, the big four, if you want to call it that, that's their offense right now because they're not getting much from anybody else. So unfortunately, it puts a lot of pressure on them to be productive. But the Soto home run was great to see. And then the Soto home run in the fifth inning, which was big because the Mets are holding on to dear life for a 4-3 lead. We kind of know 4-3 isn't going to be enough. There's two outs. There's nobody on it. Just said you got to get production out of the top of the order. And Lindor lined out. Nimmo grounded out. The at-bat that Soto had in the fifth inning, in a lot of weird ways, I know it wasn't dramatic. It wasn't a bottom of the ninth inning walk-off. It wasn't a, you know, game-time grand slam in the eighth inning. It was a home run up 4-3 in the top of the fifth inning. But in a lot of ways, that was a Soto-Met moment because it was a battle. He had the jawn going back and forth with him and Realmuto. He had hit two balls foul that he had smoked. And then finally, doesn't just hit a home run to give them a 5-3 lead. He hits one a million feet. Like that really felt like something he did to us. So maybe you're waiting for the Juan Soto welcome to the Mets moment to be dramatic. In a lot of ways, I thought his second home run on Saturday was the moment. I had an urge after he hit that home run. I didn't do it because it was only 5-3 to basically text every Met fan I know and say, that's what we paid him for. This is the Juan Soto we have been waiting for. At the time in the game, he was 3-for-3 with two home runs and a ball that went right off the fence that Soto was slow to get out of the box on because he thought it was a home run. That's how locked in he was. But it was really good to see Lindor come through with the clutch two-run double that broke the game open. Obviously, they tack on more Soto with two more RBIs in the eighth inning. The solo job by Jared Young. The solo job by Francisco Alvarez. And also great work by Waskar Brazoban. That was the other real positive out of Saturday. Because Brazoban's been normal lately. He's been struggling lately. And I don't know if it was the workload because he had pitched so much. But Brazoban comes in with one on and nobody out in the sixth inning. At this point, it is 7-4, so it's still close. You know, it's not like the game's over. You know, they could get the tying run to the plate, which they did after he hit Otto Kemp ahead of the count 1-2, and he made big pitches when he needed to, got Marsh to pop up, got Trey Turner to ground out after falling behind, and then gets the relatively clean seventh, and he gave up a leadoff hit, but then got a big double play against Alec Bohm. Two scoreless innings out of Waskar Brazoban, and they need that. Especially because of the uncertainty now with Reed Garrett, who had his implosion.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
On Friday. So those were six really big outs by Brazoban. As far as what Griffin Canning did, I think we have to be realistic about what Griffin Canning is. If Griffin Canning is going to pitch into the sixth inning and he's going to allow 4 runs, 3 earned, which was his line on Saturday, I think that's what we should expect from him. And it's not the worst thing in the world. That's a back of the rotation kind of arm. And if the Mets are scoring runs, which they did on Saturday, pitching into the sixth inning, allowing 4 runs, 3 earned, should be good enough. I thought the other thing that was impressive about Canning was that outside of the fourth inning where he struck out the side, he was in trouble every inning and for the most part made the big pitch when he needed to. That first inning was a 2-run first inning. It could have been worse. I thought he was pretty much getting out of the second inning until Francisco Alvarez couldn't block a ball in the dirt. He walked back-to-back guys in the third inning, got Kepler and Realmuto with big outs. Got out of the fifth inning, an inning that also could have been worse, after Jeff McNeil's dropping a pop-up because Brandon Nimmo's sort of getting in his way. That's what I'm talking about with Saturday not being the cleanest thing in the world. I mentioned Soto. I mentioned the Alvarez defensive play. And then you've got to start the fifth inning, and this really could have been a disaster because at the time, the Mets are up 5-3. You get a Trey Turner fly ball to center, and you saw the inexperience, I think, of McNeil, even though it was Nimmo's fault. And here's what I mean by that. Jeff McNeil's not a center fielder. Has he played an adequate center field? Yeah, he hasn't done anything awful to this point. I think Brandon Nimmo, knowing that, kind of goes into center field mode and says, hey, I got a shot at this ball. Let me go get it. And because of that, he cuts in front of Jeff McNeil. Jeff McNeil drops a pop-up. And that is an error. Like, I got to hear these freaking Fox announcers say, how's that an error? John Smoltz is like, I'm not going to write it down in ink. They may change it. Why would they change it? He dropped the pop-up. The ball was in his glove and it came out. Why? Because you're mad at Brandon Nimmo for blocking him? Like, I get it. Brandon Nimmo made the play more difficult than it was. Absolutely. But what are you, new around here, John? Well, they're not giving the error to Nimmo. He didn't touch it. And you're certainly not calling that a double when it was dropped by Jeff McNeil. But I bring it up because it's a credit to Canning that that inning could have been far worse. That's why I thought Canning's performance, 5+, 6 hits, 4 runs, 3 earned, 2 walks, not the greatest thing in the world line-wise. I thought it was better than what his line would tell you. The unearned run on the McNeil pop-up and another run that unfortunately is credited as earned because Francisco Alvarez can't block a ball in the dirt. So overall, he pitched well. And the Met offense broke out, and it was a real feel-good kind of victory. It was a feel-good kind of victory because when you lose 7 in a row and you're facing the team that you're battling out for the National League East, 8 in a row, 2 games back, it just would have felt, it would have felt like the end of the world. I have to be honest with you, and I know that there's a lot of people listening right now, whether live on YouTube or downloading episode 502, wherever you download your podcast, where you may feel like it's the end of the world. I don't actually feel like it's the end of the world. I'm not happy. I have some worries, but I think getting a victory and being within a game of first place and coming home to face Atlanta, who got the horrible news on Chris Sale, which is a huge benefit to the Mets. It sucks for Chris Sale, but it's a benefit to the Mets. Then having Pittsburgh and then coming home again, I actually feel okay. I feel like this team's going to win some games. Now, I'm not telling you they're going to go out and get all of this back and go win 7 in a row. I don't have that kind of confidence, but I have the confidence that the bleeding has stopped. And if I turn out to be wrong, A, there'll be a lot of really pissed off Rico Bronyas, but B, yes, you can remind me. You have every right to, good and bad. Just like I was reminded quite a bit that I said to Carlos Mendoza, what's the love affair with Jared Young? And then he goes out and hits a home run. Trust me, I don't mind being wrong about that. But I don't have the sense, as we prepare for this 4-game series with Atlanta, I don't have the sense the Braves are going to kill us. I really don't. Do I think it's going to be a sweep of Atlanta? Not necessarily. But I feel like the win Saturday, as bad as Sunday was, and it was bad, and lifeless and listless, whatever word you want to use, I do feel like, okay, they've kind of stemmed the tide a little bit, and they're going to win some games. The rotation is about to get healthier. We'll see what Frankie Montas does on Sunday or Tuesday. I don't know if he's going to be great, but I am at least willing for the first inning going into Tuesday's game to say, all right, that was spring training. Not going to get nuts about a 14 ERA in rehab games. Sean Manaea appears to be a week away. Mark Vientos appears to be days away. And Juan Soto feels like he's completely unlocked. He didn't have a great game on Sunday, but truthfully, nobody did. Lindor hit the meaningless home run in the eighth inning, though I was happy he hit it. Because I'm done. I got to tell you, I'm done hearing about the stupid streak. I'm done. I don't want to hear about it anymore. There was an email from Leo who writes, Lindor homers, how dare he? There goes the 28-game winning streak in games in which Lindor homers. Oh, well. Who cares? Like, every time that streak would be mentioned, I'd roll my eyes and I would think about a situation like Sunday's game where, well, if they're down 8-0, was he not trying to hit a home run? I mean, it happens. It's a very happenstance kind of thing. Now, I do think that Lindor is incredibly important to this offense. And as he pointed out last week, it's tough to score runs when your leadoff hitter is never getting on base. But I'm kind of glad that the streak is over. Let me get to some of your emails. We will pick a Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series. We will pick a net negative. But let's hear from the people right now. Thomas writes, great seeing you at Fanatics Fest on Saturday. It was great seeing everybody. It was a fun time on Saturday. I still can't believe Mendy came on. I was really expecting that he wasn't going to make the trip from Philly to do an autograph signing and to come on the Rico Bronya, but it was appreciated. Also, the only day the Mets decided to show up was Saturday. I wanted to say this team needs starting pitching help at the deadline, along with a bullpen arm and maybe a center fielder. I don't think the Mets will survive with their starting pitching, even when Manaea and Senga returns. The SP spoiled us in April and May, but the depth is lacking right now. The starting pitching over the course of this stretch has been mediocre to bad. Can't deny that. I'm not ready in late June to say that's a priority at the trade deadline. Because the other thing you have to keep in mind, you don't like the starting pitching depth. Okay, Frankie Montas is about to come back. Who knows if we're going to hate him after one start? Certainly on the table. Sean Manaea is about to come back. And Kodai Senga is throwing. Carlos Mendoza did confirm he is throwing. He's light tossing. He's not able to run yet. But Senga could be back, let's say, August 1st, which is the trade deadline, right? It's right around the same time. You have David Peterson. You have Clay Holmes. Obviously, somebody can get hurt. There's no guarantee that guys are going to remain healthy. I said my piece on Canning. I think he can at least be a back of the rotation arm. Who do you think is going to be available that's that much better than what the Mets currently have? I am getting confused on who said it. I think it was you, Pete. But someone suggested Seth Lugo. I think it was Hoff. Or maybe it was Tommy.
It wasn't me. I know that.
Not you.
Yeah, it's a good idea, but I heard that too. And I don't know what show that I honestly don't remember what show it was. Was it even our show?
It may have been Evan and Tiki. I honestly don't remember now.
Someone did make that point, like, hey, Seth Lugo is a good person to look into because the Royals aren't doing that great. They might be selling him off.
I remember what it was now. It was a caller to Evan and Tiki who was saying, hey, they should go after Seth Lugo. My main point, though, is I'm not telling you the Mets couldn't use a starting pitcher because a lot can happen between now and July 31st. I think on paper with the guys that are coming back and with what they currently have, unless an ace becomes available, because sure, who wouldn't want an ace? No, I wouldn't be in love with trading back of the rotation arms when it's a seller's market. So you're going to have to give up so much. I think the priority, and it's becoming clearer and clearer to me, besides bullpen help, that's obvious. Yes, they need bullpen help. What team doesn't need bullpen help? And if it's doing the same thing that Stearns did last year, which is buying a bunch of reliever lottery tickets, I'm not against it. Now, could a high-end arm become available like Emmanuel Clase? Maybe. And that's certainly worth a discussion. Or Johan Duran? Sure. But they need a bat. Like, it is becoming clearer to me and to all of us, the longer they go without scoring runs, the more I've got to reevaluate what my opinion was on this offense being as good as what I thought. And so the answer may be they got to get a real center fielder, because right now they don't have a real center fielder. Tyrone Taylor, as much as we like him, he's hitting 230. He's got 15 RBIs. Like, he's a wonderful defensive player. To act like that's an everyday center fielder, it is not. That is not an everyday center fielder. And as far as McNeil is concerned, A, the young guys, whether it's Mauricio, Beatty, Acuna, take a pick, they're not doing enough offensively to warrant McNeil in center. And oh yeah, McNeil's not a center fielder. So it's becoming day by day by day, brick by brick by brick, more obvious that yes, it is a bat, and yes, it is a center fielder.
But it can't just be any bat. Like, you named Duran the other day at the Rico Bronya Live the other day at a Fanatics Fest. And that, okay, that's amazing. That makes sense. That's a huge pickup. But if it's not that, and it's a quote-unquote simple upgrade, but the offense isn't impressive enough, but he's had history, I don't want an experiment. It needs to be a star-studded center fielder. Otherwise, I'm not making that move. It can't be a simple upgrade.
I would love a star center fielder, but a simple upgrade is still more productive than what they're getting. Like, I think what we all need to do is, I like Tyrone Taylor. This is not a bashing of Tyrone Taylor or blaming Tyrone Taylor, but that kind of production out of center field is just not good enough. It's just not. And I remember at the beginning of the year or during the offseason, even surmising with you, hey, a young guy is going to come up and take this job. Like, at some point, it's not going to be Tyrone Taylor and Jose Siri. Obviously, Siri got hurt. It's been forced to be Tyrone Taylor. I know Jet Williams is tearing it up at Double A, but it doesn't feel like it's going to be him. Obviously, Acuna doesn't even play center field. He barely plays, and when he does, he hasn't been very productive. So that young kind of horse coming up to take the center field job hasn't happened. So I think it's going to force them to have to make a deal at the deadline. And I get what you're saying. And look, Cedric Mullins isn't the greatest player in the world, but Hoff, is he more productive than what they're getting in center field right now? The answer is probably yes, even though Mullins isn't having a good year.
A little bit. Yes, he adds more speed. He has a little more pop in the bat, but not enough where I go, ooh, this is good. We have a major upgrade at center field. And that's what I'm looking for. If you're going to do it, go all the way. Don't sit there, because I'm sitting here, and I'm sorry about this, Ev, but I am tired of the, we'll take a little inch closer to getting to where we need to go. Let's make that jump. We're right there, right?
Yeah. No, I get you. I would rather the better player. I'm not disagreeing with you. I ain't fighting with you. I'm simply saying that an upgrade is better than no upgrade.
Yes.
And right now, if we're identifying, okay, they're not scoring enough runs. I've been wrong with my expectations on the Met offense. Well, where is that missing? Where is it not coming from? And I think the answer is center field, DH, and then the big one is third base. Like, Mark Vientos was coming off a big year last year. He didn't produce. He got hurt. And third base has become Brett Beatty and Ronnie Mauricio, and they just haven't performed, especially the last couple of weeks. Clayton Caldwell writes, has the manager given up? Too bad you spoke to Mendoza on Saturday, because I'd really like to know why on Sunday, why in the bleeping world he would hit Hayden Senger for Juan Soto. I mean, that's a give up if I've ever seen one. So for those who did give up and weren't watching the ninth inning, you know, maybe you were tuning into game 7 of the NBA Finals, or maybe you just said the Mets are losing 7-1, I'm done. Which is reasonable. In the ninth inning, with the Mets trailing 7-1, it was supposed to be Soto, Alonso, and Nimmo. And Hayden Senger pinch hit for Juan Soto, struck out. Pete took his turn and flied out to right. And then Jared Young pinch hit for Brandon Nimmo and popped up to...
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Third base. You're right, Clayton. That is a give up spot. Do I love that in a 6-run game in the ninth inning? I don't necessarily love it. I'm not screaming about it. I'm not going to lose sleep over it. I think the thinking behind it is that the Mets are currently in the midst of a stretch in which they're playing every single day. All right? Every single day. They just played these three in Philly. Before that, they played three in Atlanta. So they are playing their sixth consecutive game in a stretch in which they are playing 13 in a row. This week coming up, they fly back to New York. Not that it's a long flight, or they bus, or they train, whatever they do from Philly. And they're playing four straight games against Atlanta in 100-degree heat. And then they're going to go to Pittsburgh, play three in Pittsburgh. I'm not trying to give you a sob story. I'm trying to give you the explanation, even if people don't like it. And I think what Mendoza thought in a 7-1 game is, let me just steal one less at-bat for these guys. Does it make a difference in the long run? Probably not. But I don't think, if the Mets aren't in the midst of this long stretch, if we see something like that. But that's what happened, if you don't like it. Nunzio writes, can we stop in this belief that the offense is better than it is and will eventually turn it around? They're not good. At some point, you are what your numbers say you are. The bottom half of the order is automatic outs with non-competitive at-bats. With the starting pitching and bullpen struggling, it puts the pressure even more on the offense. And we've seen what they do with pressure, average with runners in scoring position. Saturday night's 7-home-run game was an anomaly, the typical once-a-year Citizens Bank ballpark game they usually have. Get ready to see a lot of 7-2 games moving forward. P.S. Talking about nationally televised games, not knowing the history, last night's game cutting to Trump announcing attacks on Iran was similar to the announcement of Bin Laden, also Mets, Phillies, and Citizens Bank Park, and the broadcast didn't mention that either. I thought about that as they were doing that, as they said, hey, if you're watching this game on Fox, we're about to cut to the president who's going to make a speech about the bombs that were dropping in Iran. You know what's funny about this? It's not the same, but it is the same. Like, this is not to break down the differences, but, you know, us attacking nuclear facilities in Iran isn't the same necessarily as the announcement that we found the terrorist behind 9/11. But I do understand your point, Nunzio, because I did think the same thing, like the setting being the same. Sunday night baseball, even though this was Saturday night baseball, in Philadelphia, Mets, Phillies, Bin Laden's caught, the crowd's chanting USA, USA. So from that perspective, it was similar, but the world event part is not.
No, well, the only thing is, I will say this, Obama and Trump both walked down that red carpet, made their announcement, and then went back, and there were
that
no
is
questions.
True.
That was dead on.
Yeah, that part was similar. Though Trump had, you know, Marco Rubio behind him.
Right, yeah.
And J.D. Vance and the other guy, yeah, the Fox News guy. I forget his name already.
Bob O'Reilly?
No.
Bill O'Reilly?
No. Hegsmith.
Hegseth. Oh, right.
Yeah, that was the only difference. Let me address the Alvarez thing, because obviously that did come out as quote-unquote shocking news on Sunday. And you know when something is shocking and then you think about it and you're like, okay, that's not shocking? That's how I took the news on Sunday that the Mets were sending down Francisco Alvarez. We had talked about this on the Rico weeks ago. Hey, is it an option? Is it a possibility? And I made my opinion. I disagree with it. I wouldn't do it. I understood the thought. Gary Cohen later brought it up on an SNY broadcast. It's become more popular to talk about, hey, would they send down Francisco Alvarez? I didn't like it because, and I'll lay out the differences that I have that clearly the Mets disagree with, which is fine. They make the decisions. I just bitch about it. I thought that Luis Torrens had earned the playing time and had earned being the more of the time starting catcher, whether that's 60-40 or 70-30. I think his defense is good enough, and Alvarez is not giving you enough offensively to warrant playing him consistently over Torrens. I just thought, you know what? Alvarez can learn at the major league level. He's still going to get at-bats. He's still going to play. It's not like other spots in baseball where when you're not playing, you never play. If you're a backup catcher in Major League Baseball, unless you're really buried, you're still going to play 2-3 times a week. And I thought the Mets were better if Alvarez was here. So I did not disagree with the thought that Alvarez shouldn't be the everyday catcher. I just figured he probably learned more being up here. And that's where the Mets disagree. Because Carlos Mendoza made it very clear on Sunday. The reason they're sending him down is to play every day. That his improvements, especially since he made that swing change during the offseason and missed considerable time in spring training, that working on his swing, getting at-bats, working on his defense behind the plate, they feel he will benefit more by doing it every day as opposed to being at the major league level and doing it 2-3 times a week. That's just where we disagree. Because obviously with Luis Angel Acuña, they don't feel that way. Because Luis Angel Acuña never plays. We saw him start on Sunday, and it was like a shocker writing his name in the scorecard. He doesn't play a lot. And in spring training here on the Rico, we talked a lot about that. Like, hey, how much do they value Acuña playing every single day versus being a valuable piece of this team and being a valuable piece of this roster? And the Mets have made the decision for 4 months they'd rather him be a pinch runner off the bench, a defensive specialist off the bench, maybe start once every 2 weeks. And I don't disagree with them in terms of what gives the Mets the better chance to win. He's a valuable piece. So I thought with Alvarez, 2-3 times a week as a starter, runs into a home run here and there. He's not abysmal defensively, despite some of the mistakes he's made. He throws out runners at a better clip than he has in the past. The catcher's ERA thing, which I think I ended up bringing up on Evan and Tiki as opposed to Rico Bronya, because I did get an email last week saying, hey, can you run the numbers? Give me the Alvarez versus Torrens catcher ERA. And there was a one-run difference when I checked it about 5 days ago. It's probably gotten worse. I don't put that all on Francisco Alvarez. A lot of that is timing. Alvarez missed a part of the year in which the Mets were pitching their asses off. Were they pitching their asses off because Alvarez wasn't there? I don't know if I can make that connection. But that's the disagreement the Mets have with my camp, which is the Mets are better. Like, the Mets are a better team if Alvarez is the backup catcher playing 3 times a week versus Adin Sanger. That's where I disagree. The Mets are looking at this more long-term, or more, not even long-term towards next year, but long-term in terms of, hey, if we could get him right over the next month and he can help us come August, it's like adding someone at the trade deadline. I'm just kidding. I don't actually think that. Adding someone at the trade deadline. I hate that line. I usually mock that line, which is what I'm doing, in case anyone's deeply offended by that. I am mocking the, it's like making a trade at the trade deadline. No, it's not. It's getting a guy back from the minors who sucked, or it's getting a guy back who was hurt. That's what it is. It's not a trade at the deadline. Just want to make that clear.
It's funny. You know who just said that the other day? Aaron Boone about Luis Gil. He said, sounds like, you know, he's going to come back and we can use that as a move at the trade deadline.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not. It's not. It's just, I want to make that clear. It is not a trade at the trade deadline.
And by the way, just as Mets history, it's still bitter and stupid. It's like when Yoenis Cespedes was a free agent, and then because he opted out of his contract, and then the Mets re-signed him again. It's the same thing. He was always part of this team. So don't act like that was the big offseason move, was bringing back Yoenis Cespedes. He was still here. You needed to add more. But anyway, I digress. Dude, the Alvarez stuff is, to me, I think there's more layers to it. And I think that Carlos Mendoza hinted something to us at the Rico Bronya Live. He mentioned that his hand may still be affecting him. There's a lot of impact that hand takes catching and then swinging on top of it. I think he's still hurt. I think they need to give him a rest. I think it's easier to go clear his mind and everything going back down. And I think they know that.
Well, I think they also know that he cannot be a hindrance defensively without producing big numbers. And over the last week or so, there have been high kind of big moment, high leverage, if I guess that's the term used more now, a lot of big moment defensive miscues, whether it's in Atlanta with A, not blocking the ball in the dirt and then making the throw to second base, allowing the winning run to go to third, excuse me, or what I even said on Saturday. Like, I stand by this. As stunned as I was that they sent him down, when I thought about it, I went back to that play on Saturday and said, that's why they sent him down. That was enough. That was the play that broke the camel's back. That's why him hitting a home run later in the game was irrelevant. Like, he's being sent down for two reasons. He hasn't hit, but more than that, his defense has now gone backwards. He's regressed. That was the question I asked Mendy on Saturday, which was, has Francisco Alvarez regressed? And he kind of danced around it because you don't really want to call him out to that degree, but he has. And the irony of this whole Alvarez thing is that he was the guy who sat there at spring training and said, we have the best offense in baseball. Number one, the Mets don't have the best offense in baseball. And number two, you haven't done anything to add to them being close to being the best offense in baseball, which is why when he opened his mouth and said it at the time, he was the wrong guy to say it. You know, you want to be Brandon Nimmo and say that, fine. You're Juan Soto and say that, fine. Lindor, fine. Alonso, fine. Francisco Alvarez is still trying to prove himself. And you're talking about how, yeah, we're the best offense in baseball? Well, now you're in the minor leagues. So when we talk about old takes exposed, that's an old take exposed by Francisco Alvarez. Before we name the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series, I do want to name the net negative. Because you've got some options. They did lose this series 2 out of 3. You know, David Peterson started the rubber game and gave up 5 runs and 5 hits in the 4th inning and got chased for 5 runs and 4 innings. He's absolutely an option. I was looking at the offense and I was like, all right, is there anyone offensively that jumps out at me as a net negative? And the answer is not really. You know, the Mets didn't hit a lot. They scored 2 runs in game 1 and 1 run in game 3, but there was so much offensive production in game 2. There's no one that jumps out at me as being a real culprit. You know what I was thinking about? And I'm not saying he's the net negative, but I thought about him a little bit, even though he ended up driving in 4 runs and hitting 2 home runs in this series. And that's Lindor. Because in game 1, Lindor did nothing, took an offer, didn't get on base. And he also had a few defensive plays in game 3 that, if he makes, may change the game a little bit. But that's too harsh. So to me, when I thought about it longer and I thought about it harder, the absolute no-brainer net negative is Reed Garrett. Because Reed Garrett comes into a baseball game in the 7th inning and it's 2-2. And when the Mets are tied 2-2 in a game that was started by Blake Tidwell and a game that was started by Zach Wheeler, you are in the Phillies bullpen and you are Reed Garrett, who is the 2nd best reliever in the Met bullpen after Edwin Diaz. And you are facing 9-1-2 of the batting order in a tie game for 1st place in the NL East. And you could tell me about how hard the contact was all day and you can't get anybody out. You face 4 batters. You give up 2 doubles, a walk, and a hit. That's the net negative. So I mentioned a few other names, but truthfully, it is an obvious one. Reed Garrett, let me look at my list. For the very first time this season, you are the net negative from this 3-game series loss to the Phillies. You agree with that, Hoff, right? There's no one else that you would argue against Reed Garrett?
I mean,
a prestigious net negative?
I could always... The offense was so terrible. They really were. Like, Ronnie Mauricio was 2 for 9. Tyrone Taylor, I think, was he 1 for 9?
He was 1 for 8 in this series.
1 for 8. Right. Mm-hmm. And then you had Jeff McNeil, who did hit the home run the first day, but he also did nothing, too. I know he didn't play on Sunday. But, I mean, he was what? I think he was 2 for 9 as well.
McNeil's a good candidate because of the double play in the 1st inning of game 1. That was such a huge play. Bases loaded, 1 out, tone set for the series, and he bounces into a double play. But you mentioned it. He hit the second of the back-to-back home runs that tied the game up against Taijuan Walker. But he did, and then again, even though they won the game on Saturday, comes up with 2nd and 3rd, 1 out, and he pops up the left field. I think the problem is there really isn't an offensive player other than just picking on one of the guys at the bottom of the order, whether it's Tyrone Taylor, Ronnie Mauricio, or Brett Beatty. We could pick on one of them and say, ah, you're the net negative. Ultimately, I go back to Reed Garrett. It's a 2-2 game. It's the 7th inning. You're the best reliever, and you don't just give up a run. Like, if he had given up a run, okay, it happens. Can't be perfect. He gave up four runs. He couldn't get an out. Like, I mean, I love your read, but Jesus, man.
And the other thing, too, is, and I always say this, and we talked about this in the last years with Atlanta, like, you know, you could have stopped the bleeding, you know, in that one game where where Blackburn came in and basically blew it up. Like, right here, Reed Garrett had an opportunity to stop the bleeding, too, and maybe the Mets would have caught fire. Maybe, hey, you know, we're in this, score another run the next inning. And the momentum just goes backwards. So you're right. It's got to be Reed Garrett.
And keep the game close. Like, if you give up a run or two, who knows? I mean, who the hell knows what happens in the eighth or ninth inning? No one has any idea. So Reed Garrett is your net negative. As far as the Rico star of the series is concerned, I'll give you a few guys that I give honorable mention to, and then I'll tell you who I think should win. Honorable mention, Oscar Brazoban. I mean, I mentioned this on Saturday's game. Brazoban comes in. It's 7-4. He inherits a runner on. Puts himself in a little bit of a pickle when he hit Otto Kemp ahead of the count 1-2. Got Trey Turner as the tying run at the plate to ground out in a big spot. Got three outs against the heart of the order in the seventh inning. So I thought a really good effort by Oscar Brazoban in the one game that the Mets won. I give him a little bit of credit. The other guy offensively who probably earned it just based on raw stats is your boy Brandon Nimmo. Brandon Nimmo went 2-for-4 in game one. He went 2-for-4 in game two. And even game three, where the Met bats do absolutely nothing, Brandon Nimmo gets two more hits, goes 2-for-3. So the stats are great. 6-for-11 with two home runs, two RBIs, and a double. It's very tough to argue those stats. But he's not, in my opinion, the Rico I'm the man now star of the series. Because even though the raw numbers may not be as good, to me, it's clearly Juan Soto. And even though Juan Soto went 0-for-2 with two walks in game one, and in game three went 0-for-2 with a walk, so he at least gets on base, I thought what he did in the middle game of this series, the home run in the third inning, the third of the back-to-back-to-back, but it's the one that gave him the lead, the insurance home run in the fifth inning, which was such an awesome and classic battle, and then the two-run double in the eighth inning, which broke the whole game open. At that point, that base hit was the one that made you say, all right, we got ourselves a victory. So overall, his numbers are good. He went 4-for-9. He got on base 7 times in 12 plate appearances. So pretty good. Hits the 2 home runs, drives in 4. Believe it or not, it's only the second time Soto got it. And the first time he won the Rico, I'm the man now star of the series, it was met with controversy. I remember people did not like that Soto won it, but would you agree he is? Obviously, it sucks when you lose a series. These awards don't feel the same when you lose a series, but would you agree he's clearly the I'm the man now star of the series?
Yeah, and you said it earlier in the show, and I did actually go to Twitter with this when I saw it, when I retweeted that pimp job of a home run and him looking back at the catcher and talking it up. Like, that, to me, right there, that is the Juan Soto that we were dying for. We've been waiting for. Whether or not that's the biggest moment of the season, I don't care. That was the moment that reminded me, like, hey, this guy's aura is for real. This guy's attitude is for real. And this is going to be going on for a long time. He's going to have slumps for sure. But that's more likely the Juan Soto we're going to see and love. And I can't wait to see him in big spots. I can't wait to see him in playoffs. Like, that gets me excited. So whether or not the Mets won the game, won the series versus the Phillies, I mean, that put my head into this is going to be a serious contending team if that's the Juan Soto we get on a daily basis.
I'll read you an email from a guy who is consuming the Rico Bronya live on YouTube. David writes, Evan, I'm watching the Rico Bronya right now, and you're frustrating the crap out of me. Now, before I continue this email, do you want to guess what is frustrating the crap out of David?
Is it something that you're doing? Like, was it your shirt?
No, it's actually, believe it or not, it's actually a baseball opinion, which is great. David writes, I emailed you a couple of weeks ago saying the Mets offense won't turn it around because they have a bunch of garbage career hitters, and you kind of laughed off the idea. Now you're saying Tyrone Taylor is a great they, but can't be the starting center fielder. Now you're saying Tyrone Taylor is, I'm not sure. They may be a little, but yes, I don't think he's a center fielder or starting center fielder. Evan, every batter they use in the 6-9 spot is a career 220 to 240 hitter. In order for this team to succeed, as if they needed four guys to do the things they've never done in their careers, why would and did you or anyone else think this offense would be a high-scoring team? Why would you think this team would turn it around when they don't have the guys that have ever done it before, Dave? Couple of things, Dave. Number one, and I think you'll see this over the course of a year, good and bad, eventually, as hard-headed as one is, as hard-headed as I may be, eventually there's a moment where your opinion changes, good or bad. Now, it doesn't change for me day by day or even week by week, but we are almost halfway through the season. So here we are, 78 games in, and I am admitting for the first time, wow, maybe this offense isn't as good as I thought. So let's just start there. It's natural over the course of a long season to say, hey, I was wrong about it. It's hitting me now. Now, let me get to the whys, because your why is a good one, which is, hey, look at these guys. They suck. Why did you believe in them? I'll tell you why I believe this Met offense, believed this Met offense would be a lot better. Number one, they've got nothing out of Mark Vientos. I did not expect Mark Vientos, A, to be on the IL right now, which you can't predict, and then B, to be as little production from him as we saw. I thought he was going to regress a little bit. I didn't think he was going to put up the same numbers he put up from late May on. But A, I thought he would be productive. That's number one. Number two, I believed in Brett Beatty to a degree, not as if he was going to be Vientos of last year. I also believe that one of the young players, whether you didn't want it to be Brett Beatty or it was Ronnie Mauricio or it was Luis Angel Acuña, one of the young players would produce. One of them. I also believed Francisco Alvarez would produce a little bit more offensively. I also believed, and I said this earlier in the podcast, in terms of center field, I didn't think they were going to rely on Tyrone Taylor. I thought between him and Jose Siri and maybe a young player coming up to play center field, whether it's Jet Williams, whether it was comfort in moving Acuña there, I thought they'd get more production there. I also thought they'd get more production out of designated hitter. Jesse Winker's been on the IL. They have not gotten production from the left-handed side, especially when Jared Young plays. And Starling Marte's been better, but not as good as I thought. So hopefully that answers your question in terms of why I thought certain things that haven't turned out to be the case. I thought they would be much better offensively. And now the bottom of the order is a big concern. You're right. So if you want me to say you were right, David, you were right. I mean, if you emailed that 3 weeks ago, which you probably did, and I read it and said, I believe in the bottom of the order, I did. And now it's tougher than two. Enough time goes by where it's like, I can beat my head against the wall over and over again because I want to believe something, but eventually you have to admit, okay, maybe it's not coming. And right now, you're right. 5-9 of this offense is not coming. Let's get to this Atlanta series. I actually feel decent about this series against the Braves. One thing that already helps them is Chris Sale. Chris Sale had this bizarre ribcage issue. He's going to be out for a while. And so here are the pitching and the way it lines up for these four games in Atlanta. It's going to be Paul Blackburn against Spencer Schwellenbach in the game one on Monday night. My hope is they've seen enough of Schwellenbach now twice in a week where they're going to hit him hard. They did a decent job against him last week. Remember, they did jump out to a 4-1 lead that the bullpen blew. I don't know what to expect from Paul Blackburn. This is only his third start of the year. His first one was really good. His second one was very abbreviated after a tough start. It'll be Frankie Montas against Spencer Strider in game two, which is the pitching matchup you probably should feel worse about, considering how tough Strider is, though, again, the Mets have had some success against him, even though he really picked it up late in his last start. Frankie Montas, complete wild card. The back end of the series is where I think you feel a little bit better. Clay Holmes in the Wednesday game against this young pitcher, Didier Fuentes, who is very young and made his first career start last week. And then Griffin Canning against Grant Holmes in the finale of this series. And then they play the Pirates. And you know who they're not going to face in Pittsburgh? They're not going to face Paul Skenes, because Skeens is scheduled to pitch Wednesday, which is shaping up to be an awesome pitching matchup against the Brewers. So they're not going to see Paul Skeens. So this seven-game stretch without an off day, at home against Atlanta, where the pitching matchups are rough to begin, and then three in Pittsburgh against the Pirates. 5 out of 7. Would we be okay with 5 out of 7? Would we be happy with 5 out of 7? I'd be thrilled with 5 out of 7. Because right now, they got to get some wins. They got to straighten this bad boy out. As far as the Phillies are concerned, because the Mets are now one game behind Philadelphia in the National League East, if you are going to partake in some scoreboard watching, the Phillies do not play on Monday. And then the Philadelphia Phillies go to Houston, and they take on the first place Houston Astros. So let's go Astros. And then over the weekend, they go to Atlanta to take on the Braves. So we'll see how the Phillies do over the course of this week, going to Houston and going to Atlanta. But this stretch of games, 4 against Atlanta, 3 against Pittsburgh, go get 5 out of 7. I think that would all make us feel a lot better. Now, Pete, you can confirm this with the Rico audience. Are you up for coming to tomorrow night's game with me, Mets-Braves, or tonight's game? Most people probably listening on a Monday. Game one, Mets-Braves. We're going to be in the building.
Let's go. I am pumped. I'm ready. I made sure that I'm avoiding my family on Monday just to go to the Mets game with you.
See, when you frame it that way, I feel like such a bad guy.
No, I'm very happy to go. I will have enough family time the rest of the week, I promise.
And if technology permits, we will probably then do dueling drive home Ricos for the opener of this series. So after the game on Monday, if you want to get it live, it will be on the WFAN YouTube page. If you want to be patient, it'll be uploaded and you can download it wherever you download your podcast. Episode 503 will be a drive home reaction to the New York Mets and the Atlanta Braves opening up the 4-game homestand and the 4-game series at Citi Field. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate you downloading and hanging out with us on another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.